Peter B. Collins, News and Comment. It's April 15th, 2015. I hope you got your taxes filed. And I hope there's a fat refund coming your way. And if the spooks have their way, your tax dollars will continue to pay for dragnet surveillance right here in the U.S. of A. Representatives of the FBI and NSA are lobbying the House today. Yeah, there's a spy in the House.
Like a spy in the House. Oh, no. Searching for a clue in the dark. Spy in the House. Oh, no.
That's Steve Winwood's version of a great tune that originally came from Was Not Was, Spy in the House of Love. And yes, the spooks are on Capitol Hill with closed-door meetings, briefing members of Congress on why they need to keep dragnet surveillance on Americans. We know it doesn't really do any good. And we know that the claims that the spooks have offered us in the past are laughable about the utility of these programs. And we now know more than we did even a few months ago that the Drug Enforcement Agency was collecting metadata on all American international calls going back to 1992. And USA Today revealed to us that top dogs at the NSA tried to persuade the last boss there, Keith Alexander, to end the phone record collection program because it's expensive. It produces masses of data that they can't really sift through. And they feared the public reaction when it was exposed. Well, the spooks insist that they want to keep doing what they've been doing. We have 45 days left until the expiration of the current version of the USA Patriot Act. It's only one of the sources of the authorities' claim to spy on Americans in the United States without a warrant, as required by the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution. And as we have covered in great detail here, last year we had a weak bill called the USA Freedom Act, authored by Jim Sensenbrenner, Republican from Wisconsin. It was weak, and then mysteriously, between the time it left the committee and went to the floor, it was hacked even further, we're told, by officials of the FBI. And then that meaningless bill didn't pass. And so it appears that the angle that will be taken to try to preserve as much of the power that the spy agencies have is to revive the USA Freedom Act as it was fully watered down and hope to prevent any further restrictions on domestic surveillance. But there are restive members of Congress, including some of the extreme radical freshman Republicans. And I don't want to include Republican Tom Massey of Kentucky in that group, but he is a relatively new member of Congress, and he's the Republican co-sponsor of the bill I've been talking about. He co-sponsored with Mark Pocan of Wisconsin the Surveillance State Repeal Act, which is simple and clear. It would repeal the entire Patriot Act, the 2008 expansion of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, and limit the Presidential Directive 12333. That's what I think makes the most sense. But they're working their magic up on Capitol Hill, and I would like to suggest that you ask your member of Congress before she or he votes to renew the Patriot Act if your crotch shots are secure. I think this is the only way we're really going to provoke an honest discussion about the extent of the surveillance that's going on. And I credit John Oliver, the guy with the new show on HBO. As you know, he did this interview with Ed Snowden, and he said, look, Americans don't care about, you know, spying on terrorists. They care about the secrecy of their dick pics. Maybe Anthony Weiner ought to come out of retirement and go to Capitol Hill and talk to his old buddies. about the security of private photographs exchanged between individuals. I don't know if Congress will actually reduce it to this common denominator type of discussion, but I'm kind of persuaded that it's the only way we're going to get people's attention. And so the FBI is warning that it'll lose access to investigative leads for domestic terrorism and espionage and our credit card information, hotel records, and more if Section 215 of the Patriot Act is allowed to expire or is deleted. And frankly, they need a court order, a warrant, to look at my credit card information and yours too. They haven't been doing that, but I don't believe the Fourth Amendment is optional. Now, one of the things that we have to contend with here surfaced when yesterday I interviewed retired Senator Bob Graham, a Democrat from Florida. That interview will be featured in our Processing Distortion podcast this week at BoilingFrogsPost.com. It should be posted on Thursday. And I'll have an excerpt for you here on the News and Comment podcast. But Senator Graham, who to his credit is not going quietly into retirement, is demanding the release of the full, unredacted 28-page memo that he says will explain the Saudi role in financing the terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001. And Bob Graham is a Southern gentleman. He is captive to the diplomacy and understated rhetoric that old people in the United States Senate used to observe. And I had to push him a little bit because he's willing to say that the FBI issues statements that are false. But he's not willing to say that the FBI lies. He had a phrase that he used. Let me look it up here. He calls it aggressive deception on the part of the FBI. But when I tried to get him to acknowledge that this is an agency that is out of control and has been on and off for decades, well, he reverts to that beltway mentality, doesn't want to make too many waves, ruffle too many feathers. And I'm afraid that that mentality is what is going to carry the day. And with all of the extraneous fear that is present across America today, generated by what we discussed yesterday, the false threats and the way that these are exaggerated to feed the defense contractors, the intelligence contractors, and all the other profiteers who benefit from the continuation of conflict in the Middle East and what we're told is the necessity to protect Americans by sacrificing our constitutional rights. Now, Tom Massey, this Republican from Kentucky, I'm going to try to track him down and see if he'll give us an interview. But he went to one of those meetings where the folks from the FBI and NSA are using secret information to try to persuade members of Congress to extend these excessive and illegal powers that have been grabbed by these agencies. But it's important to note that if it's the USA Freedom Act that is offered up as the reform, well, it would not prevent the NSA or FBI from warrantly searching through the troves of records that they already have. It wouldn't restrict surveillance efforts authorized by the Reagan-era executive order I referenced, 12333. Even the recently disclosed bulk domestic phone records collection by the DEA would be untouched. So we need to push for the Surveillance State Repeal Act. Please call your member of Congress, call your senator, and leave a message that you support the Foreign the Surveillance State Repeal Act, and you want them to co-sponsor it, because Massey and Pocan have only picked up 10 co-sponsors so far. And I think this is one of the most critical issues before the American body politic today. And I'm afraid that, once again, the forces of repression and the promoters of the police state, will win the day. And speaking of the promoters of the police state, Mike Rogers is the new guy who runs the NSA. He also runs the Cyber Command, as you may know. And he has been hammering the tech giants. He's kind of changed his tune a little bit because we're always told, well, the NSA wants a backdoor. They want to be able to get into the Google network through a backdoor. They want into the Facebook network through a backdoor. But Mike Rogers is upping the ante. I don't want a backdoor, he says. I want a front door. And I want the front door to have multiple locks, big locks. Rogers says that his front door will allow for essential security measures while keeping data safe from hackers or an outside attack via the back door. But this is bullshit. Because if you give access to the government to private networks, whether you call it a front door, a back door, a side door, a trap door, a ceiling door, the same vulnerabilities can be exploited by other people. By those with ill intentions, whether they're in Nigeria trying to scam you or hacking from Moscow, Tehran, or Beijing. And Google got a knock on its front door and received a notification from the antitrust chief of the European Union, accusing Google of abusing its dominance in web searches. And they've begun official proceedings into whether the Android smartphone software forces phone makers to favor the company's own services and applications. Now, this is a trend we've seen. I don't know how many Google products you use, but I don't use Gmail because I don't like the way they scan my Gmail and then serve up ads that they think reflect to what I've been emailing about. And there are other reasons. But I do have a Gmail account and I have a YouTube account. And because Google bought YouTube, they now force you to access YouTube through your Gmail account. And this bundling is something that I don't like because sometimes I can't remember the damn password to get into the account that I want. And there are some other problems that I won't bore you with. But it's interesting. I did not realize that Android has an 81% market share in smartphones. I thought Apple had a higher share than 15%. So this does really portend a monopolistic trend. And the United States did open an inquiry into Google's market share and its muscle back in 2013, but they closed it with no real charges being filed. So we have to leave it to the Europeans. And it's interesting because it appears that Microsoft was one of the complaining witnesses who prompted the Europeans to investigate Google. Let the billionaires slug it out in court. Fascinating news from The Guardian today in an op-ed written by a woman, I believe, named Jess Zimmerman. And it draws attention to a new manifesto, which I will call the Table Flip Manifesto, which was posted on the web a couple of days ago. And this is written presumably by a woman and clearly someone in Silicon Valley. And I want to read a couple of excerpts from it to you. It's pretty powerful stuff. Women are leaving your tech company because you don't deserve to keep us around. For years, we thought it was us, that we were failures. We thought that if we just did twice as well as the pasty hoodie wearers around us, we'd move up through the ranks too. Instead, you got twice as much work out of us than you did of our male peers and tossed us a few scraps of women's networks and lean-in circles instead of promotions and raises. And then, forgive me if this offends you, but I think the language is appropriate. She writes, "Fuck that. We're done. It's not us. It's you. We've watched mediocre men whiz by us on a glass escalator, including in the part of tech companies which include a disproportionate number of women, roles that get dismissed as pink collar, like marketing, HR, and QA. We've had our work torn down in code reviews and performance reviews while our male peers backpat each other's shitty work onwards to the next production incident. When we try to play by the rules, which we do because we've seen what happens to women who don't, we're denied opportunities because we aren't ready for them. And we are also denied the things you say we need in order to be ready. When we do these things without your corporate approval, we do it knowing that we may be the next woman who gets quietly fired for being too forward. When we try to take a seat at the table like Cheryl said we should, we're called presumptuous. We're under-sponsored and over-mentored, in scare quotes for all the times that mentoring has been more like mentoring. Our serious technical hesitations are answered as though we're asking what Git is. So I will link to this. It is called tableflip.club. It is unsigned. There is no contact way to reach the person who posted this. She does have a similar Twitter account at tableflipclub if you want to follow her. But I think this is a very powerful and important statement. I'm glad to see it. Well, the corporate media accounts of the movements in Washington the last few days regarding the Iran negotiations, I think, are highly misleading. New York Times headline on the story, Obama yields, allowing Congress say on nuclear deal. Now, it's fair to say that the president didn't want Congress to be able to review or approve or decline an agreement with Iran, and he's well within his rights and historical precedents to make that claim. And yes, he did compromise. After a 19-0 vote coming out of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee embraced a compromise plan that on the surface does give Congress a role in reviewing whatever final deal John Kerry and his counterparts hammer out with the Iranians and put some new rules into place that I think are a little dangerous because they, you know, require the negotiations to be completed on time. And I don't think that's something we can really count on. It also imposes rules that don't allow the U.S. to lift any sanctions on Iran for up to 60 days after Obama submits the proposed agreement for review by the Congress. But when you look at this, and for example, the New York Times in its second paragraph says that Republicans and many Democrats said the president simply got overrun. But when you look at the bottom line here, if Obama submits an agreement, if the House and the Senate vote to reject it, then he would veto that, and the Senate would attempt to override his veto. But in the Senate, he needs 34 votes to prevent the veto from being overridden and the agreement from being rejected. And so I think this is a win for Obama. And as you know, I'm sharply critical of the president when I think it's appropriate. And I don't like meddling by the Congress in this deal that hasn't even been finalized. And I'm particularly offended that Democrats are siding with Republicans against this president. But when you really analyze what has been agreed to here, I think the president gains the upper hand. Every day I like to pause and thank the people who support my work here at the Peter B. Collins Podcast with your subscriptions. And I see that Joey Perillo here on Tax Day kicked in his monthly contribution. Joey is an actor who had a role in the season premiere of HBO's Veep, the show that Julia Louis-Dreyfus is the star of. I haven't seen it yet, Joey, but congratulations to you. That means you're a member of my union, and we'll get pensions together. Marianne Razzo, she is a monthly subscriber who does double what is required. Brian Mazzi, Wendy Gebauer, they also support my work here, and I invite you to join them. I need more subscribers here. For whatever reason, some people have checked out recently, and I'd like you to replace them. Step on up to peterbcollins.com. Click on the link under my picture on the homepage that says sign up. That takes you to the next page where you choose $5, $10, $20 a month. Our best deal is the $50 annual subscription. New annual subscribers get a bonus gift from me, the ebook edition of Pepe Escobar's Empire of Chaos. And be prepared for a Pepe Escobar podcast soon. I just put out an invitation to him today. Well, in rare broad-based agreement, the Senate yesterday approved sweeping changes in the way Medicare pays doctors. And if what we're being told can be believed, this is a real fix to a problem that for 17 years they have just been doing annual patches. And at the last minute, they'd put a patch on it and kick the can down the road till next year. Well, finally, after 17 years, they got 92 votes to end the plan that would have cut payments to doctors by 21% starting this week. And there are fundamental changes that are too wonkish to really go into detail about. But in general, it tilts toward the Obamacare approach to health care and not the Republicans. And despite this rosy moment where there was this broad-based support, the Senate once again refused to consider the nomination of Loretta Lynch to be Attorney General. That's been on ice because the Republicans are trying to pass a sex trafficking bill that includes unnecessary pandering abortion restrictions, and the Democrats are not going to accept that blackmail in exchange for moving the Lynch nomination. And also related to health care and Medicare, a new survey shows that now 9 out of 10 adults in this country have some form of health insurance. Coverage gains in the last year amount to about 3.6 million who have gained insurance since last fall. About almost 15 million adults have gained coverage since the first round of Obamacare. Now, as you know, I want single payer. I wish the fix to Medicare that the Senate agreed on was a plan to expand access to Medicare by slowly lowering the eligibility age. And to me, it would be brilliant. I think it's brilliant because, number one, it would solve my personal problems for health insurance. But the lower the age of eligibility for Medicare, the healthier the pool of people covered by Medicare is, the lower the costs are going to be. Medicare has the lowest administration costs because the private insurance carriers aren't involved for the most part. And so the Affordable Care Act, we were told, had three objectives: to increase coverage, and arguably that's happened, slow the rate of increase in costs, I haven't seen that myself, and improve health. Well, that's something that can only be measured in the long term. We droned another guy in Yemen over the past weekend, Ibrahim al-Rubaish, who's believed to be in his late 30s, and did some time at Guantanamo. He was released by the Bushies in 2006, after which he joined al-Qaeda in Yemen. Now, I would love some journalist to do an in-depth look at Ibrahim al-Rubaish and relate to us whether he was radicalized before he went to Guantanamo or because he went to Guantanamo. And he wasn't held indefinitely, or at least not nearly as long as some of those who remain uncharged, who are racking up 12 and 13 years in that status. But he was considered al-Qaeda on the Arabian Peninsula's main ideologue and theological advisor, so he's kind of the heir to Anwar al-Awlaki. We put a $5 million bounty on his head, and somebody popped him. And while we haven't claimed credit, nobody else in the region has drones that routinely kill people in Yemen. And so, once again, we will claim that we've decapitated this ugly monster, but it's just an illusion. Meanwhile, refugees are scrambling in various ports of the Mediterranean right now. 400 migrants are believed to have drowned off the coast of Libya after the boat in which they were traveling capsized. Over last weekend, it was reported that more than 5,000 refugees came ashore in Italy alone. And so this migration creates a lot of problems. Certainly, people are leaving conflict zones in Africa, and they're seeking refuge in Europe. And it is straining the Europeans. That's why we've had ethnic conflicts in France that were highlighted by the Charlie Hebdo attacks. News from Human Rights Watch in a report released this week. Israeli settlers regularly employ Palestinian child laborers in exploitive conditions during planting, harvest, and export of agricultural produce on farms operated by the Israelis in the occupied West Bank. Now, this exposes so many layers of immoral behavior. You start with the fact that these Israeli settlers are squatting on Palestinian land in a manner that is clearly illegal. And this squatting, you know, it's not tents and lean-tos. These are huge condo complexes and communities that are being built. And then they take the land that belongs to the Palestinians in some of the most fertile parts of the Jordan Valley, the part that's designated Area C under the Oslo Accords. Area C is completely under the control of Israel. It's the area in which the fertile Jordan Valley sits. 50% of the land is allocated solely for the use of 10,000 settlers, 13% of the population of the Jordan Valley, and they live on 37 Jewish-only settlements that are illegal under international law. 44%, which now tallies up to 94%, is reserved for the Israeli military and Israeli natural reserves. The approximately 65,000 Palestinians are left with 6% of the Jordan Valley. And this exploitation of child labor is really egregious. There are laws, Israeli labor law, but not enforced in the occupied and settler residential areas. President Obama has made good on the intention that he shared with Raul Castro in Panama last weekend and officially has announced the lifting of the U.S. designation of Cuba as a state sponsor of terrorism. That label has been in place since 1982. Congress has 45 days to consider this before it becomes effective, but it cannot interfere with Obama's decision without voting on separate legislation. And so the White House thinks that they're pretty safe on this. The other three countries on our state sponsor of terrorism list are Iran, Sudan, and Syria. The volunteer deputy, he's described as a rich insurance executive who contributes money and other things to the sheriff in Tulsa, Oklahoma, 73-year-old Robert Bates. He's the guy who claimed he was reaching for his taser when he used his pistol and shot and killed a black man who was on the run in a drug sting investigation. 44-year-old Eric Harris was killed on April 2nd. Now, my first coverage of this, I kind of acknowledged that the story that Bates has told is accurate, that he was reaching for his taser and accidentally grabbed his pistol and fired a shot that killed this man. But as I've looked at further accounts of the incident, and now the volunteer cop has been charged with manslaughter, I'm glad there's going to be an investigation and a trial, because maybe we'll find out the truth here. Because people in Tulsa have been saying that his claim that it was an accident, that he mistakenly grabbed the taser, is simply not true. And finally, today, we get a little thirsty here in California. We're in the third year of a serious drought. And we've recently learned that Nestle, the international food and beverage company, which one of its brands is Arrowhead 100% Mountain Spring Water. Well, one of the places where it pumps that water is in the San Bernardino National Forest. That's in Southern California. And they've been pumping the water and transporting it out for decades. Only problem is that they're licensed to transport the water in pipes and then on trucks expired in 1988. Now, this is where corporate greed meets bureaucratic incompetence. And who's actually responsible for the non-renewal of Nestle's permit? And could we get that permit brought out and a public hearing to see if it's in the public interest to allow Nestle, and I have no idea what the contract looks like and whether Nestle actually pays the government for this water. But we got farmers, fish, and people in California who really need that water. And my guess is that the bureaucrats will find a way to retroactively renew the permit and let Nestle continue to take the water under the current terms. I think we ought to reopen this, maybe put it out to bid, but we need precious water supplies in California these days, and we can't allow unpermitted exploitation by firms like Nestle to go unchecked. So let me hop on trigger here and grab my divining rod, and we'll go look for some water. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until